Tune Audio. Check it out. Organic Climbing is the official sponsor of Sends and Suffers podcast, and if you didn't know, now you know. I have been using this company's products since before my podcast, since I basically started rock climbing. They're cool, they're rad, they're customizable. You can get bouldering pads, chalk buckets, backpacks, they've got shoes, they've got almost anything you can conceive to make you look fly, to make you functional at the crag. Check out Organic Climbing, put in Sends and Suffers at your purchase. It helps this podcast out and really support someone who has been supporting the conception of climbing communities since the beginning. Josh and everyone at Organic is all about making sure communities grow. And that is a huge thing coming from a small company that moves massive, massive mountains. So check out Organic Climbing. Tell them I sent you. Let's get into this episode. Friends and enemies, lovers and haters, welcome to Sends and Suffers podcast. I am your host, Mario Stanley. If you haven't already, please follow, like, and subscribe to Sends and Suffers podcast. Every bit counts, and we would love to hear from you. So take a moment to leave a comment. These go a long way and help others know what they're getting into and how good this show is. If this is one of your favorite podcasts, consider becoming a Patreon. For as little as $5 a month, you are investing in Sends and Suffers podcast, and it's like buying your boy a taco, hanging out, and getting to know the good that is coming your way. Monthly recaps, early show releases, and all the other cool things that we do. Thank you so much for listening to Sends and Suffers podcasts. Today's episode is a podcast takeover. Emily Chan Newton with Everybody Climbs Podcast, which we already released their first episode a little while back, so scroll back a week or two, you'll find it, is doing a podcast takeover today. Our guest is Tanner Jones. Tanner is a single pitch instructor certified by the AMGA, the American Mountain Guide Association. He currently works as a behavioral interventionist and a community coach for a Colorado-based group called Revel, where he leads climbing and rafting trips for people with autism. He also teaches clinics at festivals, like the annual Adaptive Climbing Festival, where he brings his firsthand experience as a lower limb amputee. Enjoy today's conversation with Emily Chan Newton and Tanner Jones.
All right, cool. Well, let's just get right into it. Tell us about the Range of Motion Project, or ROMP, elevator pitch.
Yeah, Range of Motion Project is a nonprofit that exists because of 90% of people worldwide don't have access to mobility care or assistive technology. So there's a ton of people out there that don't have prosthetics. There's a ton of people that don't have wheelchairs and all this stuff. So Range of Motion Project came out to provide care to those folks in Ecuador and Guatemala and South America, and give prosthetics to people that would otherwise not receive them. So they've given over 5,000, I think, devices, or almost 5,000 prosthetics to folks.
How did you get involved? What was your journey? And you can go as far back in history or into your life as you need to answer that question.
Yeah, I met ROMP, or was introduced to ROMP, in Granby, Colorado, at a Appalachia Rising concert.
That's so cool. I love them.
Oh, one of my favorite concerts. Amazing. It was so cool. Just go check out Appalachia Rising on like your preferred streaming service. It's amazing. Yeah.
So it was just like a summertime concert kind of a deal?
Yeah, I was standing there. It was my first summer as an amputee. I had just gotten an internship in adaptive sports at the National Sports Center for the Disabled. And I was just like super jazzed to be there, but we were running a veterans camp, and this is one of our activities, was to go to the Appalachia Rising concert, just like a Friday night free concert in the mountains. It was super fun. And there was this lady that was standing in front of me, and eventually she turned around and saw that I was an amputee and wanted to introduce herself. And her name was LP, who is one of the most amazing humans that I've met. She works for Romp, and her office is in Winter Park. And she wanted to talk to me more about Romp and just kind of introduce herself. And so I met this random lady at a concert in the mountains, and it was just super wild. Just kind of chatted more and got added to their elite climbing team. So there's this team every year of athletes, or I mean, we're definitely all athletes if we climb 20,000 foot mountains or 19,500 foot mountains. And a lot of us wear prosthetics. A lot of us are allies in the community, like prosthetists, family members, friends, just partners. And last year they bring, I think 18 or 19 of us down to Ecuador. So we pay for our trip fees, we pay for our guide fees, and we raised $100,000 last year, which was enough money for like 15 prosthetics, which is super, super cool.
Wow. And I guess we should say, because we're recording this right now, it's near the end of 2023. So you're talking about 2022.
Yeah. Yep. 2022. I was on their team. And they do this team every year. They've been doing it for quite a while now. And they try to summit Cotopaxi every year. Summit Cotopaxi is an active volcano, so they can't always do that. This year they'll be doing Cayambe, and they have done Cayambe in the past. Either way, it's not about the mountain. It's about Romp. It's about the impact that we have as amputees and as allies in this community, that we're able to bring our communities together. We're able to raise these funds, and we're able to just like provide what we take for granted sometimes. It's so cool. Some of these folks in the Amazonian, or like the Ecuadorian Amazon, don't have prosthetics, and they're walking around on crutches that they make, or prosthetics that they make, or on their knees. There's a lot of lack of mobility, and a good fitting prosthetic is everything for me. A good fitting prosthetic allows me to climb outside, allows me to guide, allows me to like hang out with my kids, allows me to shower, allows me to do like everyday essential things. It's so essential, and it's just not accessible down there. And so Romp is doing it, and they're doing a really good job. Yeah.
And talk a little bit more about like the specific locations that were chosen.
Yeah, Guatemala and Ecuador are the big two ones. So they have an office in Quito, and they have an office in Guatemala City. And then this year, 2023, they started their mobile clinic, which drives up into the Ecuadorian Amazon and serves that population.
Wow.
Yeah, it's super cool.
So how does it work? Can you walk through? I know each situation is going to be so different for each individual, but just as an example, how it might work, how somebody might get in touch with the clinic or the mobile clinic, and what's their step-by-step process?
Totally. So the greatest thing about the climbing team is it's not only like individuals from the United States that can afford to come do this stuff. They also put patients that have received care on the team. So last year we had the absolute fortune to climb with this individual named Yahir, who didn't have enough money to afford the local healthcare system. He was in high school and wanted to run on the Paralympics. He wanted to be the first Paralympic athlete for Ecuador, which is super cool. This dude crushed. He was an awesome dude to hang out with. But Yahir lived quite a ways out of Quito, and he would have to travel by bus all day to get to Quito to be seen by Romp for care, because he was denied access by the public health system. So he needed to find a nonprofit that was able to fill that gap, and Romp was it. So he would travel long, long distances. And in prosthetic care, it's not like a one day you're done kind of thing. It takes a lot of time to build and fit a prosthetic properly so that you could travel back home a whole day and wear it for the next year to 2 years, or however long he can wear it. It's individuals from all over the country that can travel to those local hubs. And Quito is the capital, so it's a big hub for them.
And how would people hear about it to even know that it's a resource?
Yeah. Yeah. Romp does a really good job at, I don't think it's advertising, but making sure they're known in the public health system, so that doctors and prosthetists in the system are able to refer patients to Romp if they're not able to see them.
Oh, that's great.
So there's a lot of really good connections in that system. And Romp has a lot of different, like Spanish accessible websites and blog posts and all those great things that individuals can hop on and find. So
And also, when I was looking at the website, one thing I noticed that really stuck out to me is you click on team, the global team. The first thing on that page, the very top of the page, is what percentage of the team are people of color? What percentage of the team have disabilities? What percentage of the team are women? And it's right up there at the top, and it's 81%, 10%, 81%. Ooh. And I just was like, well, first of all, that's dope. But second of all, I think it says a lot about the organization that they put it there. Like, you don't usually, you have to search for that, but that was right at the top of the page. And I thought that really meant a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, they're so cool. And Dave Krupa, who, I don't know if he runs the show, but he's running the show, and he's an individual that wears a prosthetic. So it's not a company that's out here trying to do the best that they think they can. They're individuals that know what the community needs. They're wearing the prosthetic that the communities are wearing, and they're doing it. Like, it's for us, by us. It's incredible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about, for people who don't wear a prosthetic anything, the importance of, I mean, obviously you and other people on the climbing team use it in these amazing ways, you're summiting mountains, but can you talk about, like, just the day-to-day, how important it is just to, for existence, like for what most people are going to end up using these for?
Yeah, a prosthetic to me is life. I don't know if you've ever been on crutches or ever had a time where you sprained your ankle and it was painful to walk around, but mobility is something we really take for granted until we lose. And not having your leg, for whatever reason you're there, a prosthetic can do a lot of really cool things. Like, you're able to shower, you're able to, like, shower safely, you're able to hang out with your kids and go on walks. And a good fitting prosthetic is a lot. And the way a good fitting prosthetic really works is you have to have a prosthetist who can scan or duplicate your stump, is what I call it, a residual limb. So the remainder of my leg, they have to duplicate that and then build this shell that goes around that's almost identical. But I walk on all of my stump. Like, I walk on the outside. I don't just walk on the bottom. Mm. And so it has to be nice and tight that I can, like, feel the pressure throughout and not just on the bottom of my leg. Pressure points can make you, like, unable to walk or even put it on. And a pressure point can be tiny. It can be so small.
Hmm.
And then there's feet. Like, the feet, there's so many feet and knees and hips and all these joints that people get. There's so many different things for different ability levels. The United States healthcare system kind of has it funky where there's these K levels, K like kangaroo.
Okay.
And there's K1 through, I think, K5. And it's based on how active you are.
Huh.
But you're most of the time evaluated right after surgery in PT. And then that's given to your prosthetist to say what Medicare is going to cover you on.
Oh.
So if you want a running leg and you're K2, you're never going to see a running leg. And you're probably not going to be able to see a leg that helps you get to your running leg. Like, you're not going to be able to advance yourself because you're stuck in this system that's not giving you what you need.
So that process, because I don't know really anything about this.
Yeah.
If you wanted to get to a certain leg or foot, do you sometimes have to work through different feet to get there? You don't just go straight to that one?
Absolutely. Hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of, like, differences in the return or, like, dynamic. Like, a climbing rope is stretchy. And so we want some dynamic in our feet, some rebound in our feet to help propel us forward. At a low K level, you're really getting a plank of wood that's not, like, responsive.
Mm.
But at a K5, you're receiving those, like, big Paralympic, like, blades and those kinds of things. Yeah.
Like the crescent moon shapes that you see people running with?
Totally. Yep.
Okay. But that would be like a K what?
K5, K4. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Wow. This is, like, it's so much that it's I wild. Don't know.
So crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you have to kind of be trained then? You have to practice, because otherwise would you just, like, bounce the first time that you put one of those on?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you got to be careful. They're pretty poppy. I mean, it's not like having an ankle. You know, I don't think anything really duplicates the ankle. There's a lot of return in our calf that helps us all run.
Huh.
And in these carbon fiber, these now fiberglass legs that they're making that have a bunch of rebound in them, it helps, but it's not as good. It's no, like, benefit. Yeah.
Sure.
But yeah, you can jump. They're sweet.
Yeah.
Bouncy. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. And so with the work that Romp is doing, how are they? I get the idea that this system is not great the way that it works here in the US. So what's the system that Romp is able to employ? They're a nonprofit, like their resources are not endless. Mm-hmm. What are they able to do?
I think they still do some type of evaluation, but it's a lot of evaluation of, hey, what are you doing and what are you going to continue to do? And they try to give the best possible solution. Yahir received his first running blade 2 months after climbing at Cotopaxi, which was super cool. And he's just like running on the track now. And so Rom's able to see that and like provide that. It's not like a one and done shop. It's continuous care for sure.
And he's the runner from Ecuador, right?
Yeah.
So is he going to the Paralympics in 2024?
I'm not sure. I'll have to check.
Cool. Yeah, I do. You know, the other end of my reporting is just all adaptive sports, not just climbing.
Sweet.
That's so cool, though.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about your experience? Like, because you were a pretty new amputee when you first were introduced to Romp, and then you started working with them like shortly after, right? So how does that weave into your story?
Yeah. So I'm still a pretty fresh amputee. I had my amputation in January of 2021. Mm-hmm. Yeah. January 2021. And it all really came from a climbing fall in 2008. I was in between eighth and ninth grade, and I fell between the pads, bouldering in Morrison with my brother. They didn't really Velcro together back then like they do now. And I fell right between them and broke my ankle and ultimately broke my growth plate, which just led to years and years of surgeries and infections and height difference and what they call limb restoration. But I don't think they restored really anything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm pretty fresh, and it's all been so fast. I mean, I've always been a really active individual. And what really led me to amputation was my lack of mobility. I was skiing half a day and then dumping out my right ski boot of blood so that I could like put it back on and go skiing for the rest of the day, or like climbing up a mountain, crutching down because I couldn't walk down. I was really limited, and a lot of my days were jaded with pain. So an amputation for me was like freedom. And I had to convince a doctor. Well, I had to convince my family. And then I had to convince a doctor to amputate, because amputation is still a medical failure in this country. And so I was in the Marine Corps. I know a lot of friends that have amputations, and I knew it was the best option for me. Being a really physically active guy, I knew I could hop the K levels pretty fast and get what I needed. And the VA would support me through the rest of my life with prosthetic care. So I needed to find a doctor and get it done. And I got it done. And 10 days after surgery, I was out of pain for like the first time in 13 years, which is so cool.
It was 13 years since you had the fracture. Yeah. Wow.
And it took a while to get a prosthetic. I think it normally does, but I had a lot of like wound issues and stuff, and it eventually healed up, and I got my first prosthetic and just started going. I climbed the day before my amputation, and I climbed the day I got my prosthetic.
Hell yeah.
And a few days in between. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of gross. But
it's interesting that you say it's perceived, or that it's a medical failure in the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, why is it perceived that way?
I think the act of like removing part of the body is still pretty like not good. Mm-hmm. I think people feel that way. But they were just taking out hardware and putting hardware in and taking bones from other parts of my body, or pieces of bones from other parts of my body, and putting them into my leg to make me taller, or not being able to get the screws out and just stripping the screws and sewing me back up and letting me go on my way, and just all this stuff that wasn't restoration. There was no like there was lack of care, I felt. Their option was fusion, so that I could keep the ankle, but my ankle would be fused. But then I wouldn't really be able to climb as well. I definitely wouldn't be able to run and hike and do those kinds of things, or carry my kids for a long period of time. So I think amputation was where I needed to go.
Well, and because our technology is so amazing these days.
Oh my gosh. Seriously.
It's wild.
That's so cool. Yeah.
I mean, even the very little that I know, I'm like, yeah, totally makes sense to not fuse your ankle and get a new
Absolutely.
One. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like leg amputees that have sensors inside their legs that read their nerves. So I can like still flex my toes and bend my toes with my calf muscle, Like I can make that movement, but my toes don't move. Mm-hmm. So they have these sensors now in the sockets that read that movement, and then your toes wiggle at the bottom.
Wow. Okay. Also, I'm going to show my ignorance here, but I did not know that a prosthetic foot has toes.
Yeah. They're not much of toes. They're like kind of just cut into foam right now, but the future definitely has toes.
That's the quote from this episode. The future definitely has toes.
The future has toes. That's right.
I love that. Well, one of the many, many things, as I've started to get more into the para and adaptive climbing community, I did not realize that the choiceful, I'm not sure the term, choiceful amputation.
Elective. Yeah.
Elective.
That's a medical
word. I didn't
word,
know how common it was.
Yeah. And I think I know 6 people that fell bouldering and eventually had their leg amputated just like me.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So I would like to know some more about your work as a guide.
Yeah.
And when that came into play, and if you can kind of tell the story, if it relates to ROMP, like how did one lead to the other, or how do those puzzle pieces fit together, if at all?
Yeah, totally. So I grew up climbing. That's just something my dad did. And so we also did it. So at a young age, we got put on ropes and started climbing. And it was something I really loved. My brother and I haven't always been close in our life, but we can always connect in the mountains. If there's a sport that we can both use our skills and go and trust on each other's skills, we excel. And so I climbed a lot as a kid. When I got out of the Marine Corps, I found rafting and climbing were kind of my new outlets. I needed that like sense of adventure and that adrenaline back in my life that I had in the Marine Corps. And the outdoors did it for me, and they did it for me really, really well. So while in college, I guided a little bit on rivers, and really found a love for guiding, and just like, I knew I was a people person. So I wanted to keep that up, and I knew I loved the outdoors. So I wanted to make a career out of it. So in college, I did a career path called recreation therapy. It's not a lot, but it's similar to a physical therapist or an occupational therapist, but we use recreation and the outdoors as our medium. It resonated with me. So I graduated with that degree, and then that year got my SPI to be able to guide individuals with disabilities outside.
That's a single pitch instructor, right?
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the SPI is the AMGA single pitch instructor. Yeah.
AMGA being the American Mountain Guides.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, we're mostly climbers listening to this podcast, but just in case anyone needs help with the alphabet soup.
Thank you. Yep. Yeah, so I got my single pitch instructor certification to focus specifically on guiding in the Colorado Front Range with folks with disabilities.
Okay. So
I started that with the National Sports Center for the Disabled. When I was doing my internship in Winter Park, they have an office at the mountain. And that's where I met LP that summer. And that kind of just all brought ROMP and adaptive sports into my life. It's wild how things just kind of happen.
And you said that you got it specifically to take people out who had disabilities. Mm-hmm. Is that a different certification, or is that just like what you were planning to do with it?
That's what I was planning to do with it.
Okay.
I'm on the American Mountain Guides Association Adaptive Committee currently, and we're trying to create some new essential eligibility criteria and a new program for current single pitch instructors and current AMGA accredited folks to be able to receive adaptive credentials and then also accept adaptive climbers into their curriculum. So we're trying to make it more open. We're trying to make it more accessible. It's just, we're working the process right now.
So that's both being able to train able-bodied climbers to take out people with disabilities, but also training people with disabilities to be guides and certified as guides.
Absolutely.
That's cool. I was just talking with some folks the other day about a similar shift in mountain biking and how do you bike as well?
I don't bike too much. My brother was a downhill mountain biker, and I watched him wreck his body all summer. So
it's terrifying. But I respect other people who do it. But there is this shift there as well to train more people, both to use the adaptive equipment and then also people who use hand cycles and other adaptive bikes to get down a mountain, that they are now also being trained as guides.
Awesome.
So what do you think is, why is that important? Why does it matter if you, as an amputee, take somebody out climbing who has a disability as opposed to any other person, any other guide taking them out? What's the, why does it matter?
Yeah, I think this comes back to like how I said, for us, by us with ROMP. I think that's a huge push in all marginalized communities. We want to see more of individuals like us in the forefront of our communities. We want to see the guides being amputees or disabled or people of color or LGBTQIA. We want to see us doing the things and feel that support when we're in those areas. I feel like there's like a resistance in rock climbing and in the guide community to take individuals with disabilities out. And a lot of that comes from the access and the difficulties that rock climbing inherently have. But there needs to be a shift in the mindset where individuals like me and individuals like ACA or Adaptive Climbers Fest, all these like disabled folks are incredibly capable to go climb wherever we want. And we don't need a non-amputee taking an amputee to a easy slab wall for their very first climb, because slab requires a lot of ankle flexion and amputees often don't have that. So right. we need to know those nuances. We need to be able to support each other and give like information from a learned space. Yeah.
And to have different examples too. If somebody's newer, has just become an amputee and maybe they haven't seen somebody like you, like, I mean, I remember like you run faster than most people out there at the Adaptive Climbing Festival, you know, and to maybe somebody hasn't seen that before, you know, that like, oh, hey, that's totally possible.
Totally.
Not just like some people achieve that. You know, we see it in the Paralympics. We do see that. But I feel like that is so, it's so high level, it doesn't really seem achievable. And then we have these other community events like the Adaptive Climbing Festival and just other group get-togethers. Especially in the climbing community, and it's like at this attainable level. Like, you're not superhuman. I mean, you're cool, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. No, I'm not at all superhuman. I'm just trying to be out in the mountains and having fun. And I think everyone should have that opportunity as well. So,
and are you one of the only AMGA guides, single pitch instructors, that has an amputation?
I don't know for sure. I know of one other AMGA SPI who has a disability. Nat Varell just got theirs, and yeah, they're crushing it down in Oklahoma, doing an awesome job. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. Yeah. But obviously it's not super common. And can you talk a little bit more about the committee? It's a new committee, I assume, that started there and what you guys are trying to do?
Yep. Yeah, new committee. So the American Mountain Guides Association is trying to be more inclusive and more accessible for individuals with disabilities. They have their Affinity Space grants, but they don't currently have one for disability. So we're trying to create that space, but it also becomes hard because the AMGA has, or the American Mountain Guides Association, they have these prerequisites to be able to take a lot of their courses. And for the single pitch instructor, you have to be able to place gear and lead traditionally a 5'6" climb outside and top rope a 5'8". Mm-hmm. So it's standards that need to be met. That's their standards that they've set. But the movement within those standards is hard. There's a lot of gray area, I think. Mm-hmm. And for someone, I have a good buddy who's a walking quadriplegic, and he lead climbs 5'6", but he does a lot of aid placement, and that's not accepted in the AMGA.
Okay.
And so we're trying to find a way for him to be able to put up a route safely in a timely and efficient manner. Why couldn't he be a guide? Mm-hmm. And why can't he go out and take a bunch of folks out climbing if he's able to keep them safe, teach them the basics of rock climbing, and have a kick-ass day? And so we're trying to shift that perspective and make sure that those providers in the community are able to accept someone like a walking quadriplegic in their course. So
just seems like widening the lens. You know, we're doing it more and more overall in the climbing community of just questioning and showing more examples of who climbers are, who climbers can be. And it seems like the next level of that question is, who can be a guide? What can guides look like? What are guides allowed to be?
Right. Totally.
Could you share a story of either, I'll give you a second to think about it, either related to someone you've met with Romp, maybe a client that they've helped, or maybe somebody that you've taken out on a guide trip, whichever, if either of those just like brings a person to mind more readily?
Do they need to be an amputee or can they just be an individual with disability?
Anybody.
Cool.
We don't police.
I love it. Yeah. So last year I started a climbing team within our local USA Climbing youth regional competitions. They're all over the country. They have just youth competitions that kids can sign up for and go climb. So I created a little team for individuals with autism to climb. And I'd been climbing with this 7-year-old at the time who was just an absolute crusher. He was so strong. He was climbing like flashing 5.11s in the gym 3 months after I started climbing with him. He was just so strong. And we went outside one day to Three Sisters Park, which is up in Evergreen. It's this little mostly bouldering area. And he walked around with the crash pads all day and loved getting pushed over and having to hop back up. But we were there for 3 hours, and I think he climbed 4 climbs, and we played 2.5 hours of pinecone baseball. And it was one of the greatest outdoor climbing days I've ever had. We did a bit of scrambling and played pinecone baseball on top. Then we scrambled back down, did some more pinecone baseball. And just like being outside with this young guy exploring nature and like figuring out who he was and climbing, but not really, just like having so much fun was awesome. I learned a lot from him for sure. I learned a lot from him that day, and just like patience and understanding that climbing looks different to everyone and that's okay. It was just a super, super cool day.
And that is climbing. That's outdoor climbing.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much more than just getting up the wall.
Oh yeah. So many snacks and all
so
that.
Many snacks.
So many snacks.
What do you feel like you get? You said you learned a lot from him. What are some of the things that you feel like you've learned from working, being in, and then working in this space for so many years now?
Yeah. The biggest thing I've learned in my like professional career is how to take rests now and how to like take breaks and become a more efficient climber, just watching these individuals take their time up the wall and being okay with sitting for an extended period of time, eating snacks and playing pinecone baseball and understanding that that's totally okay. The patience in climbing is new to me for sure.
Hmm. That's really beautiful. I love the metaphor in all of that.
Yeah.
I'm also the kind of person that will like take up space in the gym at the bottom of a climb because I'm like talking to a friend about how this thing just like, this climb made me think about this thing in my life and now I'm really working through this, you know, and other people are like, can you please move?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I 100% embrace those climbing partners that we go to the gym for 2-3 hours now and do like 5-6 climbs. It's just such a beautiful experience to be able to hang out and climb. And yeah, it's not all training.
Because you also work through like other shit in your life in those moments.
So much stuff. So much stuff. Yeah.
Oh, let me ask, how do people get involved with Romp? If they would like, whether or not they are in the United States or elsewhere, what can folks do?
Yeah, the big thing for getting involved with Romp, if you are an amputee, check out their Mobility May. Give some of those old prosthetics that are collecting dust in your basement to a good home. That's a great place to start. If you are just looking to like go out and be active and raise some funds for some awesome folks, Climb With Us is in September. So you can climb with the team virtually from wherever you are in whichever way that looks for you. If you're going to go hike on a trail or go walk to the mailbox or go on a climb, hike a mountain, you can get on there. You can track your steps and you can track your funds. And build a team to like crush it.
And that's every September, right?
Every September.
I was thinking about doing that this year because you can work it out in any way you want. It can be steps. Like, could I, in theory, like go to my local climbing gym, set up a gig with me and a friend, and we like do routes and then raise funds that way?
Absolutely.
So it's just really choose your own adventure.
Oh, yeah. Get out and get, just move. Yeah.
That's so cool. But it all goes towards Romp.
Yep.
I think we've covered everything, but Is there anything else that you want to add that you feel like, I mean, this will be one of the first episodes in this series. Anything important to say on this brand new paraclimbing podcast platform?
I mean, climbing's for everyone, right? And there's a nonprofit that wants to help you move near you. So if you're an individual with a disability or new to the prosthetic world or about to be new to the amputee world, find an adaptive sports organization near you or look up the Adaptive Climbers Fest because it's a freaking party and you should be there. Yeah, movement's for everyone. It's just finding out how it works for you.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Emily Chan Newton and Tanner Jones. Emily's got a few more podcast takeovers coming down the pipeline. Don't worry, I'm back next week. And know that the posting is going to fluctuate a little bit. I'm doing a lot of traveling right now, but my goal is twice a month. Some months you might get a few more episodes. But until the next episode, remember, if you're not suffering, are you even sending at all? Strap to Nadia.